We're talking Giants football with Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. Plus, the Giants get some upsetting injury news late on a Tuesday afternoon. That and more coming up on today's episode of the Locked On Giants podcast.
You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of the Locked On Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Traina, and thank you so much for making today's show your first listen of the day, or if you're watching us on YouTube, your first watch of the day. Really appreciate you. And coming up on today's show, Ed Valentine joins me. We talk about a variety of things, including Dave Gettleman. We talk about the roster. Freddie Kitchens calling the plays, just a whole variety of Giants topics. We just opened it up, had a little fun on the discussion as well. You'll probably want to stick around and catch the end of the show where there was some good-natured ribbing and whatnot. But before we get to the interview with Ed Valentine, the Giants with some breaking news. Actually, the team didn't confirm this officially, but some breaking news that came out late Tuesday. And that is quarterback Daniel Jones suffered a neck strain on the second play of the game last week against the Philadelphia Eagles. It was a game in which Jones picked up 5 yards on a zone read run. He took a pretty good shot from Rodney McLeod, the Eagles defensive back, suffered a strained neck. And initially it looked like, you know, Jones was questionable for Sunday. Now comes word from the NFL Network reporting that Jones is week to week and he will not be part of the game this Sunday when the Giants go to face the Miami Dolphins down in Miami. So here we are, folks, again, Daniel Jones. You know, listen, his mobility is a great asset. There's no question about it. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit, I have never been a fan of mobile quarterbacks for this very reason. But that said, if a mobile quarterback is smart and is able to slide and avoid taking the big hits to prove how tough he is, there's nothing wrong with having a mobile quarterback. Daniel Jones, I'm not sure why it's taking so long for him to get it through his head that he's not indestructible, but he took some shots on Sunday. And, you know, every week I say it, you know, I watch the games unfold. And I see some of the hits he takes, and I always say it to whoever's listening, you know, sitting by me or listening to me. I always say that he's going to get significantly hurt one day if he doesn't start limiting these shots that he's taking. And, you know, it's really unfortunate because the kid's got the potential to be a good quarterback. He's got talent. He's got, you know, I think once they fix that offensive line, he's going to be just fine. I think he can win a few games for them with some improved personnel, but he's got to be smarter out there. Stop taking the big hits. I don't know why he has this need to prove how tough he is, but if you want to prove how tough you are, make the tough throws, win the tough games, carry the team on your shoulders. Stop with this playing brave, Braveheart type of routine here, because all you're doing at the end of the day is you're exposing yourself to potential big hits. And if you do get a big hit, you're potentially costing yourself playing time and letting your teammates down in the long run. So I really, really wish Daniel Jones would just, you know, be a little more judicious out there with when he goes and tries to push for that extra yard versus, you know, dialing it back. And, you know, if he doesn't learn that, I fear that he's not going to have a long tenure here in New York. So, you know, unfortunately, it doesn't look like he's going to play. Now, this is as of Tuesday night. We'll obviously get more information from head coach Joe Judge during the week, and I'll have that for you. But looks like it's going to be Mike Glennon to start on Sunday. And the Giants did sign Jake Fromm from the Buffalo Bills practice squad. So Fromm is on the 53-man roster. My guess is they'll bring up Brian Lewerke, from the practice squad because he's been in the system, knows it, and Lewerke will be the backup. He'll be a standard practice squad elevation, so he'll be the backup. And, Fromm will just be there, I guess, as the third guy, unless they can bring him up to speed. But again, a big, big blow for the Giants offense, which right now isn't at full strength anyway. We don't know if they're going to get Kadarius Toney back. We don't know just yet if Kyle Rudolph will be ready, Sterling Shepard will be ready. But now add Daniel Jones to the list of injured players on the offensive side of the ball, and we'll see how they fare against the Miami Dolphins on Sunday if they have to go into the game, indeed, without Daniel Jones. So, all right, Giant fans, coming up, Ed Valentine joins me for a very lively discussion about the state of the Giants. Stick around. And welcome back, Giant fans, to the Locked On Giants podcast. Patricia Traynor here with you, and I am joined by a good friend, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. And we are here to talk about the Giants, who, believe it or not, folks, still alive for the, Ed, should I dare say the word?
Go ahead, Patty. Go ahead. I dare you.
He dares me. They are still alive mathematically for a playoff berth. A long shot at best, but we're going to talk a little bit about that, but we've got some other things we need to talk about. And Ed, first off, let me welcome you and also thank you for joining me as always. I appreciate you jumping on with me.
Thanks for having me as always, Patty.
No problem. And it's nice to see your face, by the way.
we'll try once in a while.
Now everybody can see you have a voice more for radio than a face for it. But anyway, this is
what I get.
Come on, man. If I don't bust your chops, who will?
I know.
Anyway, let's talk Giant football. So, Ed, last weekend, word came down that the Giants and Dave Gettleman are expected to part ways. You and I have been talking about this probably for several weeks now. Your thoughts about it, and if it does happen, is Gettleman leaving enough, or does there need to be more change, do you think?
Oh, Patty, I'm not surprised. I won't be surprised if Dave retires. I think that the Mara family, and how the Giants operate. They don't want to fire Dave. They want to allow him to leave, at least so that it looks like it's on his terms. So hopefully, it looks like it's trending in that direction. And that's not a surprise at all. The other part of your question is really interesting in terms of, is he leaving enough? Dave has always said he wants to leave the organization in a better place than he found it. And it's debatable if he is or not. I think that, because you're still trending toward a third straight 10 or fourth straight 10 loss season or double digit loss season, under his watch. And that's not good. That's not a sign of progress. But the question is, does Joe Judge, who it looks like is going to stay, does Joe Judge and whoever comes in as GM believe in Daniel Jones as the quarterback? Do they believe in the defensive foundation that the Giants have? But I think the other part of that question is, what about the scouting staff, Patty? And I think there's a lot of guys in that scouting department that have been there for a long time, a lot of guys in that front office that have been there for a long time. And it might be time for some outside views. So we'll have to see how that goes. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if there's a lot of shakeup in the scouting and front office behind or underneath the general manager, should a change take place.
Yeah, but the problem with that now is that you're knee deep in the college scouting process. So do you really want to make those changes now knowing that, you know, in a few, you know, as soon as the season ends, I mean, we're entering December now. So you're going to pretty soon have to start putting your draft reports together, kind of putting together your personnel plans for the offseason. It's kind of hard to do that, you know, unless the Giants know for sure that, hey, Dave is definitely going to retire, that, hey, we're going to promote, whether it be Kyle O'Brien or Kevin Abrams, both of whom, by the way, I'm not sure. I'd be crazy about that move. But it's a move that I think needs to be made, but it's also a risky move because this is a very critical draft coming up. And I don't know about you, but I don't know if it's, you know, you have to make some changes. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know that I would be making major wholesale shake the floor type changes with such a critical draft coming up. I mean, unless I'm missing something.
No, I think the way that a lot of that happens, Patty, when we see these changes at general manager positions, a lot of times what happens is the staff underneath the GM may not change initially, but I think you'll see a lot of that changeover start to happen post-draft, because you're right, we're so far into the draft process. I mean, you and I may be just beginning our draft study, you know, and I will freely admit, when it comes to the draft, I put a lot of that off until the off season. I focus on what's going on with the team. So people ask me draft questions and I don't know all the players' names yet. And I won't pretend that I do, but these scouts and these front office folks, it's not new to them. They've been studying these players for months, if not years. So, and they've been compiling reports, you know, for a long time on these guys. They're knee deep, if not shoulder deep, in this stuff already. So you can't completely change the scouting staff in the month of January because it's too close to the draft. You can't just start that process over. But I think over time, you know, if there's a new GM, I think you'll see a lot of new faces in that front office and scouting staff.
Yeah, no question. Now, before we move off the GM question, I know you at Big Blue View, you put up a list of preliminary names that may or may not be considered for the vacancy if it should become available. Do you think the Giants would just be better off going completely outside of the organization at this point? I mean, I know I do, and no disrespect to the people that are there, but they're all working under the same system, I think. And it would just be kind of like, you know, okay, you're keeping the same system, but maybe you're making a couple little tweaks here and there. I don't think that you would get the wholesale changes that the organization would need. What are your thoughts?
I would agree with you, Patty. I mean, when you think about it, the Giants have, by and large, worked under the same system since 1979. They have, by and large, worked under the same framework with the same general philosophy since George Young became their general manager. The organization still refers to George Young, who was a tremendous general manager. They still refer to a lot of the ways that he did things, but it's a different time now. I mean, you had George Young, then you had Ernie, who came, you know, from more or less from the George Young tree. And then you had Jerry Reese, who was trained by Ernie, and Dave Gettleman, who was mostly trained by Ernie. And you've had basically a decade of failure for the Giants at this point. One of the things you hear all of the time with the New York Giants or with outside analysts when they're asked about the Giants is that the outside view is that the Giants have a very difficult time evaluating their own personnel, that their front office is kind of stuck in ways that in their Giants way of doing things that they've had forever. And I fully agree with you, Patty, that it's time really for an outside view, for maybe an honest evaluation of the processes of the scouting staff, of the entire front office, you know, of the personnel on the roster. So I have said many times that I would like to see the Giants cast a really wide net in a search for a new general manager, if indeed Dave does decide to step down here in a few weeks.
But of course, you know, the drawback here, if you want to call it a drawback, is whoever would be the new person, if Dave leaves, they have to work well with Joe Judge. And let's not kid ourselves. Joe Judge, even though, you know, he'll be going into his third year as head coach. And by the way, I do think he stays, for those who are probably wondering. He's going to have a say in, I think, you know, maybe not a huge say, but he's going to have a sizable say in who the successor would be to Dave Gettleman if Dave does indeed lead. And, you know, now you're getting into a situation where, again, it's patchwork. And you and I talk about this all the time, how if you're going to sweep out the GM, which is as big of a move you can make, just start all over from, you know, the head coach on down. But I don't sense the Giants are going to do that, because I think they don't want to rotate head coaches every 2 years like they've been doing the last couple of, you know, the last few years. And it's really a tough situation, I would think, for any GM who might be coming in, if, again, if Dave leaves.
It is a tough situation, Patty, but you're right. You and I were both there at Joe Judge's introductory press conference. And one of the things that John Mara said in regards to Judge, who was at the time a 38-year-old first-time head coach who really came out of the blue. He wasn't yet on anyone's radar. He wasn't getting, you know, interviews for every open job. The only interview he got was with the Giants, and he landed the job. One of the things that John Mara said was, we have to be more patient with this head coach than we've been with the last two. Ben McAdoo didn't last 2 years. Pat Shurmur lasted 2 years. The Giants desperately want to get off this change the coach every 2 years merry-go-round. And so they desperately want Joe Judge to succeed. I'm fully with you, Patty. I think that, you know, I have my issues with Joe at times, but I still think Joe can be a really good NFL head coach. I hope he continues to grow as a head coach. I think the Giants are going to give him that opportunity. The issue that you have is we keep seeing and hearing, well, you know, you want to bring somebody in who has ties to Judge, or ties to Judge's thinking, in the fact that maybe they're trained in the way that the Patriots did things. The one thing you don't want is a rubber stamp for Joe. You want somebody who's going to come in and be able to say no to Joe once in a while, or be able to look at things differently on occasion. It can't simply be, you know, a rubber stamp for a third year head coach who hasn't won enough or proven enough that he deserves that kind of power yet.
Hey, Giant fans, it's the most wonderful time of the year as college football gears up for the playoffs. The NFL playoff race starts to take shape, and the NBA and NHL continue to heat up. And no matter what your sport, BetOnline has you covered all holiday season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Head on over to their new updated desktop or mobile website at betonline.ag to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus with the promo code LOCKEDON. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available. Visit BetOnline today and get your 50% welcome bonus with the code LOCKEDON. And let's talk now about Freddie Kitchens, who, no surprise, we all saw it coming despite Joe's attempt to, you know, try and fool us or put off the fact that, yeah, it was going to be Freddie. I mean, everybody saw it coming. Come on. I know it's a small sample size, and it was on a short week, holiday tucked in the short week on top of everything else. But based on what you saw from Freddie in the one game against the Eagles, are you encouraged that he could be the long-term answer, or do you still have some doubts, or are you just not decided yet?
I think it's to be determined, Patty. There were some encouraging signs. Obviously, look, 13 points is not going to win you a whole lot of football games. They still went 1-for-3 in the red zone. They still couldn't run the ball. There still weren't those explosive plays down the field that you'd like to see. I think Saquon Barkley had 13 carries for 40 yards, and 32 of those came on one play. But, you know, let's be realistic. You're not going to reinvent the wheel, you know, this late into a season. And you're also not going to be able to change a whole lot when you get placed into the play, into the position Kitchens was placed in on a short week after a Monday night game with a holiday thrown into the middle of it. So you couldn't expect, you know, overnight for the Giants to morph into some sort of offensive juggernaut. What you want to see, honestly, is a little bit better use of personnel. What you want to see are guys like Kenny Golladay not get forgotten about in the offense, Kadarius Toney not get forgotten about when he's healthy. You want to see your guys that should be your key playmakers targeted at key times. And we at least saw that on Sunday. We saw 3 targets for Golladay in the red zone, none of which ended up being completed. We saw a couple of big catches from Golladay in a drive at the end of the game where they got a field goal. So I was at least encouraged by the fact that the ball was going to Golladay, that Saquon Barkley got, I think, 17 touches. So I was encouraged by some of that. How it all plays out, you know, in the long run, we'll have to see. But I did think the emphasis was at least correct.
Yeah, I agree. Now, here's the other problem with Freddie Kitchens in determining if he is indeed the long-term answer, which I suspect he will be named the permanent offensive coordinator, by the way. But right now, it's kind of really hard to tell what they have because, A, the offensive line is still a mess, all right, which is, you know, that's a huge problem. And then you have basically a different lineup of skill position players every week because of injury. That's quite a challenge for any offensive coordinator because, you know, I believe, you know, to be fair with Jason Garrett, did we really see the offense as he intended it to be? I don't think that we did.
I would agree with you about Garrett, Patty, and I would also agree with you when it comes to Freddie Kitchens. That also extends in some ways to Daniel Jones, of course, because we're just not seeing, we've never seen this season, we have never seen the offense that the Giants thought they would be presenting. The offensive line, you know, has been injury riddled since the first week of training camp, since Shane Lemieux injured his knee. I don't even remember. That might have even been the first practice of training camp. Mm-hmm. I know it was the first the first couple of days anyway, but we have never seen the complete offensive line, the complete arsenal that the Giants thought they were going to have, that they thought they had built. So, you know, that being said, and even now, you look at the offensive line, the only offensive lineman playing right now who you can say, you know, he's a cornerstone, he's a foundational piece, he's a guy that will certainly be in this lineup next year and for years to come, the only one is Andrew Thomas. And you could clearly see Kitchens the other day, the passing attack was still short. When they needed some chunk plays, they were scheming up screens. I don't think I've ever seen a flea flicker screen to a tight end before, which was an interesting play. But again, I liked the concept of throwing a tight end screen to Evan Engram instead of throwing it to Kyle Rudolph or Chris Myrick. Throw it to a guy who has the potential to make a couple of guys miss and use his speed to make something happen. And that turned into a 20-yard play. So, but you're not going to see what the Giants can do, even if they can get Sterling Shepard back, even if they can get Kadarius Toney back, you're not going to see this offense operate at full throttle where they're throwing deep shots down the field all the time, where they're wide open all the time. You're just not going to see that until they get this offensive line fixed. And they can't do anything about this line until free agency in the draft.
Hey, Giant fans, Built Bar is going all out to make this holiday season the most delicious time of year with new limited time flavors, new types of bars, and a winter wonderland of a deal. Featuring amazing new flavors such as the Built Crave bars and their amazing puffs and ruby chocolate and lemon dip cheesecake. These and Built's other amazing flavors are available right now when you go to their site, builtbar.com. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your first order with the promo code LOCKED15. That's LOCKED15 for 15% off your first order at built.com. We've been talking about Dave Gettleman potentially walking away. We've talked about the change in offensive coordinator, but something nobody's really talking about is what other changes, maybe to the coaching staff, could you see happening because of, you know, how things have worked out over the last year or so?
Well, I think it's interesting, Patty. I haven't thought fully in terms of the coaching staff itself, although, you know, at first blush, it wouldn't surprise me if somebody like Burton Burns were to resign and they bring in a, you know, were to retire. I mean, Burton will be 70 years old and, you know, it's been a rough couple of years for him, you know, with the Giants, but I can see, you know, you could see some changes from within the coaching staff. We'll have to see what happens with Pat Graham. Pat's funny about it, but he keeps getting asked about head coaching opportunities. And he keeps saying basically, well, if I don't get fired first, you know,
he's not getting fired.
And it's funny because there are some weeks when the Giants defense looks tremendous. And there are other weeks when the Giants defense, like against Tampa Bay, just, you know, looks overwhelmed. But I think Pat's a future head coach. I'm just not sure it's going to happen this offseason, although I think he'll get some interviews. But it wouldn't surprise me if there's some changes to the position coaches. I would think that, a lot of those assistant coach, position coach contracts, you know, are a couple of year contracts. So a lot of those guys will probably be up for new contracts this off season. Other than Burton Burns, I'm not sure, you know, which guys Joe might consider replacing, but I'm sure we'll see some new faces on the coaching staff in 2021. Burton, though, is the one that comes to mind simply because I think he's a guy who's given Joe a couple of years at Joe's request and might be ready to go home to Alabama and enjoy retirement.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I would be surprised if Burton Burns is back next year. Great guy, by the way. Lovely man, but you're right. And especially, you know, he had the COVID scare this past, you know, just recently. Sometimes that makes you reassess things, you know. It's kind of, you know, maybe not on the same level as cancer per se, but when you have a significant, you know, illness like that, it can make you reassess where you're at.
The only other one, Patty, that interests me, and you still have a lot of voices in that offensive line room. Mm. And, you know, I know Freddie Kitchens was heavily involved in that for a while. You've got Rob Sale, you've got Pat Flaherty, you've got assistant coach Ben Wilkerson. And I wonder how long-term, how that room's going to shake out. You know, I love talking to Rob Sale every couple of weeks when we get the opportunity. I think Sale's done a good job with the limited hand he's been dealt this year. But I just wonder long-term how that room's going to shake out. But beyond that, we'll have to see.
Yeah, especially with that line needing to be rebuilt again. And, you know, they got to get talent into the pipeline. That, to me, was Dave Gettleman's biggest shortcoming, one of his biggest shortcomings this past year. That and, you know, the strategy they took to basically build a team that would be a playoff contender, which we saw didn't work really in 2014. It kind of worked in 2016, but it wasn't sustainable. It didn't work when the Eagles did it. I'm not sure why the Giants thought, oh, maybe this time it will work. I mean, it was just, and especially they were getting players who had histories of injuries or who were on the decline. I just didn't understand the whole approach.
I haven't understood, Patty, when you think of Dave Gettleman's time in the NFL, and when you think of so many of the things that Dave has said to us over the years, you know, about the offensive line and about building inside out and the way that you build a football team. So many of the decisions that have been made seem to go against some of the philosophies that you think of with Dave Gettleman. Even this year, you've mentioned it, building the offensive line, and it was always going to be a gamble to go with a young, unproven offensive line, to go with the group they intended to go with, which was Thomas, Lemieux, Gates, Hernandez, and Matt Peart. That's the group they intended to go with. That has never happened. The issue beyond that, the issue was, why didn't you supplement that in the draft with at least one, you know, mid-round guard center type guy who could have been, you know, as you have said, in the pipeline in case of injury. So you didn't have to go out and trade for a Ben Bredesen. Maybe you didn't have to go out and trade for a Billy Price. You had those guys in place already. Something, I don't know if you picked up on it, Patty, and I don't mean to go on and on here, but I wrote about this morning at Big Blue View. And I think Joe, during his press conference on Monday, gave us a little window into his roster building soul. And because he was asked about building the defense from back to front, he gave a very long, very detailed answer about why you do that. Basically admitted that, yes, that is how he likes to build the defense. New England does it that way. Miami, which has a New England trained coach, does it that way. Gave a long-winded answer about how defensive backs are guys that can be used in so many different ways and so many different roles, and how defensive players also impact special teams. And I thought, the first thing I thought was, that's why they drafted Aaron Robinson in the third round instead of taking one of the several young offensive linemen that were available. I mean, that to me, that screamed of, that's a Joe Judge philosophy of adding to the defensive backfield, you know, instead of a Dave Gettleman philosophy of adding to the offensive line.
Yeah, that's a good point, because, you know, Dave Gettleman has always said he loves his hog mollies, and for him to not take a hog molly, especially on the offensive line, that was kind of a surprise. I think a lot of people were like, whoa, what's he doing here?
You know? Very much so.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Ed, a couple more real quick. I wanted to ask you about Saquon Barkley. I know he's still basically said that ankle is going to be an issue moving forward. But that said, you know, and you and I were talking about this at the game Sunday about how he's always run, going for the feast or famine type of, you know, thing, the home run ball. Can they, with the change in offensive coordinator, I mean, can they get more out of Barkley, you think? I mean, it drives me crazy when he stops his feet looking for that escape hatch, and then he gets dropped for a loss of yardage, or he doesn't, you know, gets 1 or 2 yards at the most. I mean, but can they do things differently to help him, even though right now that offensive line is just not very good?
Patty, I don't know that they can, because really, I think we've seen it. Shoot, we saw it last year with Wayne Gallman. We saw it for a couple of games with Devontae Booker. When they have success running the football, it's not with these stretch plays that go toward the edges. It's not with these the zone read plays where we saw Philadelphia the other day when they were handing the ball to the backs on their zone reads. The backs were headed toward the edge. Okay, the backs were running horizontally. Those are not the kind of runs that we've seen the Giants have any success blocking the last couple of years. The stuff that we see them have success with is the power stuff straight up the middle. You know, between the guards, the inside stuff, the stuff where they can pull a tight end around and get an extra lead blocker in there. And the difficulty with Saquon, you have to love what Saquon can do when you can find a hole, when he can, you know, when he can get into space and has a one-on-one matchup. The problem with Saquon, and what I said to you the other day, was he takes the handoff, he hits the line of scrimmage, and he's looking for the escape hatch. He's always looking for the way out. Sometimes Pat Shurmur used to talk about dirty yards. Sometimes you have to just hit that hole, press that hole as hard as you can, and be willing to make sure that you get 2 yards, maybe 3 yards, not stop your feet a yard behind the line of scrimmage, look for the escape hatch, and wind up getting zero. And that's as much as the Giants need Saquon Barkley's playmaking. That, I think, is always the thing that drives me crazy about Saquon. Is I look at so many of those runs, and sometimes you just have to take the 2 yards. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not always on the offensive line. You know, when you get hit in the backfield, that's on the offensive line. But when you get to the line of scrimmage and you pitter-patter and look around, you know, for some place to go, just stick your head in there and take the 2 yards.
Yeah, I agree with you. It drives me crazy too, because, and that's why I always used to say I loved how Wayne Gallman ran the ball, because he would just lower his shoulder and he'd press that hole, and whatever he got, he got. And look, you know, 2-3 yards is better than nothing. And I just feel like the Giants don't get that with Saquon all the time.
It keeps the offense on schedule. And now you get the big run from Saquon, and we all love the big run, and we all love, you know, there are times when he makes a play, at least in the past, when he's made a play that a Gallman can't make, that a Devontae Booker can't make. And maybe the way that you get those for him with the current state of the Giants offensive line, maybe the way you get those for him is by throwing him the ball. Yeah. You know, get him in the screen game, get him out wide. I saw Freddie Kitchens use him that way a few times on Sunday, and I love that. But I'm just not sure that the Giants can do that in the run game. Patty, before we get off Saquon, I kind of have a question for you. When I think about that 32-yard run the other day, when you go back and look at that run, are you surprised that that run didn't go for more than that?
Yes.
I just didn't think Saquon had that gear to really get away from, to really make that into a 50 or 60 yard run, which he might have a couple years ago.
Yeah. Well, again, the ankle is still apparently an issue, which is why right now, if you ask me, would I sign him to a big contract? I would say, no way.
No, I would agree.
No. All right. Final question for you, Ed. Daniel Jones. You know, we talk about, What do the Giants have with Daniel Jones? We know next year's quarterback class is probably not, you know, a surefire, you know, superstar type of class, like a 2004 class, or even, you know, from a few years ago. What do the Giants do with him? How are they going to figure out what they have in him when you know, you've got the injury situation, you've got a new play caller now, you've got an offensive line that has to be fixed. I mean, this has really been, I think, a struggle with Daniel Jones, who at times looks great, and at times he's just a game manager, and you sit there and you wonder, is he ever going to be anything more? So how do you make that decision, you know, and make sure that you're, you know, especially if you're going to have a top 10 draft pick next year?
Patty, let me start with this. I'm not sure there is a decision, okay? You explained it really, really well. Can you guarantee me that Kenny Pickett or Matt Corral or Sam Howell, can you guarantee me that any of those guys who might be first round picks are A, worthy of being a top 10 pick, and B, guaranteed to be anything more than game manager quarterbacks or career backups? I certainly can't look at any of those guys and feel real good about any of them being a franchise changing quarterback. The flip side of that is, as you've said many times, there's no cap space. There's, unless you want to gut the entire roster of pretty much everyone that makes any money, you don't have the cap space to go out and get Russell Wilson. You don't have the cap space to go out and get Deshaun Watson if you want him. Name anybody that you want. You don't have the cap space. You've got the two first round picks, but you don't have the cap space to pay that guy. So I don't think there's a decision when it comes to Daniel Jones. I think he's the guy next year. Is he the guy beyond that? Who knows? But I think he's the guy next year. As for the other part of the question, it's interesting. I had Mark Schofield on my show the other day, and we were talking about Daniel, and we were talking about the idea that we've never seen Daniel Jones with a fully functional offense, with a really good offensive line, with all of his playmakers at his disposal. But we've seen something like, how many was it? It's more than, it's like 35, 36 games of Daniel Jones as an NFL starting quarterback now. And when you think about the body of work, we may already know what Daniel Jones is. Daniel Jones has never really lifted the Giants beyond what you think their talent might be, which a guy like a Patrick Mahomes can do, which a guy like an Aaron Rodgers can do, which a guy like Brady has done for two decades. The top guys, the absolute top guys, do that. The flip side of that is the Giants scored 13 points on Sunday, but I didn't think Daniel Jones played badly. He protected the football. He made the throws that were there. I think the answer with Daniel Jones might be that maybe we already know what he is. He's a middle of the road NFL quarterback, a guy that you can win with, but maybe not a guy who's going to pick you up and carry you and take you places that maybe you don't think you have the capability of going. Give him a functional group around him, and I think it looks okay. You give him a bad group around him, and I'm not sure he can lift that other than once in a while with his legs.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, some quarterbacks, you know, they have to have as much as possible perfect. And then you've got some guys who don't need everything to be perfect, who can carry the team, load them on the shoulders, and carry them across the threshold, so to speak. And I'm not so sure if Daniel's that guy just yet. But in fairness to him, you know, how many different offensive systems has he had? How many different voices has he had in his ear since he got here? It's just so difficult, you know, because you look at the situation the Giants are in with the two first round draft picks, you think, okay, great. They've got enough ammunition. They wanted to move up to get a surefire hit. But like you said, there's no surefire, you know, potential Hall of Famer in the class right now. It's too much of a gamble, and you don't have the cap space, like you said, to take on Russell Wilson's contract if you wanted him, unless you got creative with the cap. I mean, there's probably a way to do it, but it's just such a tough situation for the Giants, because you would like to think they're going to get better next year, but at the same time, you know, time's running out. Daniel Jones's contract his rookie contract is running out. And pretty soon you're going to have to say, okay, do we pay a guy who's middle of the road, a game manager, like an Aaron Rodgers? No, you don't want to do that, but you might not have a choice.
No, you might not. But, you know, we have, like I said, I think that for me anyway, if I'm making the choice, I don't think there is one when it comes to next season.
Right.
I don't think you're dipping into that quarterback pool. Now, look, you can win with Andy Dalton as, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals version of Andy Dalton. You can win with Kirk Cousins. You know, you can win with that level of quarterback. The question always was for Daniel Jones is, could he ever be more than that? Mm. And I think he can be that. I think he probably is that. Mm-hmm. But the question is still is whether he'll ever be more than that. And he may have already shown us that he's probably not going to be more than that. But again, you know, we haven't seen it because we haven't seen the full array of weapons.
Yeah. It's tough. It's tough. And this franchise, I think, is at a crossroads as they play out the rest of the season. Now, again, they're not mathematically out of it. They are a long shot, though. I mean, I think we can all agree on that, but just too many issues. Even if they make it to the playoffs, I don't see them going very very far. Not.
Oh, such a negative Nancy, Patty. You're being such a negative Nancy. I mean, come on. We just had a game where the Giants beat the Eagles. And they won three home games in a row.
Do these look like rose-colored glasses to you?
Oh, Patty, I'm just giving you a hard time.
I know. I gave you a hard time earlier, so it was your turn. But anyway, Ed, great stuff as always. Appreciate you coming on. Folks, check him out, Big Blue View. He has a podcast as well, Big Blue View Radio. And yes, he's the one who sits next to me in the press box, and we go back and forth with this banter. So what you're seeing is not staged or rehearsed. This is actual real life between Eddie and I. And this goes back to being buddies for God, how long have we been buddies for, Ed? A long time.
I started covering this team in 2007, Patty, and I know you've been doing it
when they were really good.
You've been doing it. No, I didn't pay my dues, you know, but you see at Big Blue View, we always take credit for the 2007 Super Bowl because that was the first year of our website. So we take credit for that. We take credit for nothing that's happened since then. That's all your fault, but we take credit for 2007.
Wow. All right. On that note, I think we've got to end the show. Giant fans, thank you so much for tuning in, making us your first watch or your first listen of the day. Appreciate you. Make sure you tune in tomorrow. We have the crossover show. Kyle Krabs, host of the Lock'em Dolphins podcast, will be with me breaking down the Miami Dolphins, a team the Giants don't see very often. So he'll be on with me. And then, of course, Friday, we will wrap it up with another show. Hope you'll tune in. And thank you so much. We're almost at 1,000 subscribers. So I want to thank everybody for jumping on and subscribing. I'm that close to getting my lollipop from the Lock'em Network. So for Ed Valentine, I'm Patricia Traina, and we will talk to you again tomorrow, Giant fans.